Rob, what's up, dude? Excited to have you on the Client Boost Kitchen podcast there.
Yeah, man, I'm really excited. I've seen a couple of the episodes already and love what you guys are doing. So happy to be here.
I love it. Do you know you're kind of the first official guest? So me and JD actually launched this thing together. And then JD's kind of like passed the baton over to me now to be the official host. And yeah, you're guest number one officially for me. How's that feel?
That's epic. I did not realize that. So definitely an honor, I would say.
Yeah. I didn't say it before the call. I felt like there might be too much pressure if you knew you were guest number one.
Yeah, you figured you put me on the spot on the call instead. I get it.
Yeah, that's it.
Got the right ingredients for revenue growth. A pinch of effort and a dash of hope won't cut it anymore. Grab your utensils. You're about to get some high-performing marketing recipes. Welcome to Client Boost Kitchen.
Look, man, obviously you've been at KB a while now. Why don't you just give everybody a quick intro to who you are and what you do at KB?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name's Rob Childers. I'm a director of paid strategy here at Client Boost. I've been here for about 5 years now. And essentially, I oversee our team of paid strategists. Our paid strategists are ultimately responsible for coming up with the overall strategy, optimizing the accounts, implementing new campaign types, tests, things like that, all with an effort to achieve whatever our client's overall business goal is. And so I meet with them regularly to go over accounts. If there are clients that are off track, working with them to brainstorm some strategies and next steps we can take to get us ultimately on track. So get a lot of exposure to a lot of different accounts, which I love.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like you didn't mention it, but lots of strong opinions as well. So. No, people that don't know Rob won't know this, but he's notorious for a strong opinion. So it's one of the reasons why I'm excited to talk to him. So a quick overview of what we're going to be covering today. So essentially, we're going to be looking at why your B2B paid ads are generating demand. And obviously, with Rob being the resident expert in specifically B2B paid ads, that KB felt like the best person to talk to on this. So in terms of what you guys are going to be learning today, there's really three key takeaways for you. So number one is why your paid ads demand generation campaigns are failing. We're also going to be talking you through actionable steps to fix underperforming ads and actually start generating demand. And then as we go through it, lots of reusable formulas and frameworks that make demand gen media planning a breeze, and I'm sure there's going to be lots of ad hoc strong opinions from Rob, which I'm looking forward to. So first thing, this is a big one for me, and I think this was something, especially when I used to be on the client management side, that would come up all the time, is first, just targeting the wrong people. So when ads aren't landing, I would say, for me, that's usually the first place you should look, because I don't think B2B creative is necessarily as good as it could be, but I think over the last 5 years, it's come a long way, and to the point where if your ads aren't working, most B2Bs actually have kind of, reasonably good creative that you would expect to at least see a little bit of traction from. So yeah, for me, that's usually the first place to look.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Especially with the in-platform targeting options right now, it's really easy to kind of, go in there and trust them to take over and just kind of start spending your money. I see here you mentioned the specific LinkedIn side. A lot of people will kind of set it and forget it mentality. And that's a challenge because, when you're doing that, you're effectively just giving a donation to LinkedIn when it comes to your ads. You really need to make sure that not only are you identifying your audience and testing different audience types, but refining them over time. And this is a big step that I often see missed. LinkedIn, really more than any other platform, gives you some great insights into what traffic falls within each audience segment that you're targeting through the breakdowns. And going in there, you can very easily see who is and is not seeing your ad. And many, many times I've gone in and seen like, yeah, we're targeting, sales at the VP level. And somehow LinkedIn is still bringing in, entry level positions, or interns is a big one that kind of comes through. And so really making sure that you're not only targeting that what you think is strong initially, but refining that over time and actually paying attention to the insights to ensure you're actually getting in front of the people that are decision makers. That's really important. And that takes some time, I think, when you're utilizing, the native targeting options. Obviously, there's other options, as I know you know, but that's one thing that I found really challenging with a lot of accounts that we see.
Yeah, 100%. And I would kind of like piggyback a little bit on that one. I think there's lots of good in-platform data that you can get around, you know, are we targeting decision makers? It's very easy to see, for example, in LinkedIn, yes, when you're targeting entry level, et cetera. But I think also as well, a lot of companies are not doing that work outside of the platforms as well to just deeply understand, well, who is actually in the buying committee? And one thing I know from just a piece of work that we've been doing at Client Boost over the last six months, and I've just completed another piece of work like this, is just analyzing all the closed won deals that we have, looking at, well, who's the first point of contact and who's usually involved in the buying decision? And for us, it's almost always a senior leader. And what I know from working with clients in the past is that they always want to target, well, you know, those senior leaders have managers working for them. Maybe we should target those. And those managers have, you know, senior individual contributors working for them. And maybe we should target them so we don't miss anybody. And actually what that does is, if you don't have the biggest budget in the world, is it means you're probably just missing a lot of decision makers, because the audience will prioritize those job titles because they're probably engaging with the platform more. And they're probably also a cheaper audience to get more reach on too.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't guilty of this in the past when I was first starting out, you know, but
yeah.
Start looking at audience sizes and stuff like that and decide, oh, you know, I want to be everything to everyone. You know, I want to get in front of as many people as possible. And you don't realize how counterintuitive that is to actually driving results. Because yes, if you have massive, massive budgets, it's great to be able to generate awareness and a strong understanding of your product, people who aren't maybe in that category. But when you're in, you know, most B2B companies and you have limited marketing budgets and you're expected to drive pipeline, drive revenue, right? You need to make sure that you're capitalizing on your spend as much as possible. And getting in front of everybody, you're trying to be everything to everybody, it just doesn't work. And you kind of hit that on the head. Less is more in many cases when it comes to B2B marketing. What I found over the years is that it's significantly more effective to have very small audience. Well, I shouldn't say very small, small audience sizes that you're getting in front of with your ads many, many times, you know, driving up frequencies to build that understanding and recognition. So that way, when the time comes for them to actually pull the trigger, because let's be honest, that can differ from person to person, right? Based on their company budget, based on the season, you know, things like that, funding. You want to be top of mind. It's not like, you know, a retail ad where somebody's going to see it and immediately convert. You might have those, but it's really more so about building awareness and staying in front of your audience when the time comes, so that when the time comes, you're top of mind for them. And you just can't do that when you're trying to target, you know, 50 million people with 100-day budget.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm thinking back to some accounts where they tried to do that, and I've taken over the account, and they're initially targeting 500,000 people, and they've got $2,000 a month, and the CPM's like $100 for 1,000 impressions. It's like you're reaching about 2% of the audience, and your frequency is like 1 to 2, and you're essentially, I keep using this metaphor of like yelling into the Grand Canyon. You know what I mean? It's like nobody can hear you. Nobody can hit. You know, nobody can see the ads. So that leads us nicely, I think, into the next key problem that we tend to see, which is just too few prospects are seeing too few ads. And I think the rationale here is a lot of marketers, maybe this is, and I actually have been guilty of this in the past, especially when I first started out, but I think they think they have this gift that they can just convert anybody. If you put the right creative in front of the right person with the right message and send them to the right landing page, and you use, you know, the copywriting persuasion skills that you learn on whatever online course you took, you're going to convert them right there and then. And I think that's really just not how it works. It's generally more the case that about 95% of your audience is out market at any one time, and there's really very little you can do to actually influence that. And it especially so in the B2B space where a buying decision is more complicated. And so really only about 5% of the audience is in market. And so what we're recommending now is that actually the best way to run paid demand generation on paid ads is to saturate as much of the audience as possible. And I think I really loved that point you made a second ago about actually it's much better to go for a smaller audience. And the reason I think that works is because if you pick a smaller segment, the likelihood that that segment is also going to have its own 95-5 rule in it is much, much higher, as opposed to when you have a large segment, you can't even guarantee that you're reaching anybody that's in market, which may be okay from a really, really long-term point of view if you're measuring the success over like 2 years. But most B2Bs aren't. They want some traction and they want it now.
Yeah, exactly. Jumping back to kind of some of the earlier things you were saying there, I think one lesson that stuck with me really well is we really do take prospects for granted at times, you know, especially going back 5, 6, 7 years ago, like on Meta, like, you know, you could have a very expensive product that you're generating leads at $2 for, you know? And so we got used to that, I feel like, in marketing. That's never left. And prospects aren't robots. You know what I mean? They have their own thoughts. They have their own interests. They have their own feelings. They have their own opinions. And you kind of hit on it, right? Like, the timing needs to be right. And in most cases, it's not. And so it's our job as marketers, kind of going back to what I was saying earlier, to make sure that when the time is right, we're the first brand that they think of. And that's how you're successful. And jumping to your point, you don't do that by trying to get in front of, you know, 500,000 people one time. You do that by getting in front of, you know, 10,000 people 8 times, 10 times, right? And obviously it differs depending on product, depending on platform. And you need to make sure you're combating that, you know, fatigue as well, because if you do start to get up to 8, 9, 10 frequency, letting those things ride on LinkedIn, for example, is probably going to perform much stronger than letting it ride on like a Meta, for example. And I know LinkedIn is much more B2B centric, but don't discount Meta, I think, when it comes to the ability, if you have those third-party lists and things like that, you could see a lot of success there as well. But to your point, I completely agree. I think trying to do too much or trying to get in front of so many people with small budgets, high CPMs, high CPCs, which I know we'll talk about, I'm sure, budget. Yep, here we go. Perfect. Perfect segue. You know, too many times do I see it where, you know, a company has $100 a day and they have CPCs of around $30. You know, that's 3 clicks a day. So you need to have a pretty high conversion rate to get the pipeline you want with 3 clicks a day. And I think there is this stigma in marketing where it's like, oh, it's always just increase the budget, because too many companies, especially on the marketing side, don't or are unable to articulate the value that increasing budget can bring. And I want to give you and JD a shout out on one of your previous Client Boost Kitchen episodes. You really focus on the math of marketing. And I think this is a huge component that is often missed by marketers trying to vie for more budget. Being able to really lay out the why you need the more budget, but what the expected outcome is of that budget when it comes to increasing revenue and pipeline is the key point when it comes to being able to get approval on those budgets from your CMOs, CEOs, you know, your financial people, whoever you're ultimately going to. And budget is, you know, as much as I hate to say it in today's day and age, like arguably the most important piece when it comes to building this awareness, staying in front of prospects, being able to, you know, saturate the market enough to where you are top of mind. And also, unfortunately, if you're not, somebody else is. And so it's really important that you do the math and understand what your budget has to be to properly generate the pipeline that you want, to properly saturate the market enough that you're top of mind, and to ultimately build a successful long-term funnel.
Yeah, 100%. And the only thing I would really add to that is if you really can't get the budget and it's not available, then you do need to be willing to make compromises. And I think this is the issue that a lot of companies get into is, you know, they want to have it all. They want to target the whole audience, but they want to do it with a very, very small budget. And then there's always this argument that, you know, once we see some traction, we'll scale it. And it's like, well, you're not going to see any traction, so you may as well just not even bother. Like you say, they're essentially just throwing the budget away completely. But I think probably one thing here that I wanted to come to as well, you mentioned around how marketers do struggle to get that budget sign off. One thing I would say is even when you have, you know, these tools that me and JD talk about, it's still challenging to get budget sign off, right? These are not guarantees that you're going to get budget sign off. But I know, like, for instance, the demand generation calculator, which is a new, I guess, tool that we've created recently, which helps companies understand, okay, how much budget do we need to target a specific audience size? When I kind of did dummy tests with that, with clients, and did that in front of CEOs and CFOs, suddenly the penny starts to drop about why the marketing isn't working. And then it's not necessarily that they immediately just throw their credit card at you and say, okay, put as much, you know, money in there as possible. But it does open a conversation to say, well, okay, we now understand why we need to increase it a little bit. And typically those, you know, in those scenarios, yeah, you won't get the full budget that you asked for, but you'll probably at least get a decent lift because you're speaking numbers and that's the language that they understand too.
Absolutely agree with everything you just said. It is challenging. I do love the focus you put though on being willing to pivot, right? I think I know because I'm guilty of it. And I've also seen many other people, right? Like when we have an idea or we want to run a specific structure, you know, it tends to be very difficult to let go of that sometimes, you know, you really want to keep like, if I just let this go another couple of weeks, I think we'll be able to unlock. And it's like, no, dude, like you're not seeing success. You're not going to see success, right? Focus on what works. And if you're at a point where you can't get more budget, don't be afraid to cut everything else out, right? Because the easiest way to get more budget is to drive the ultimate result, right? And if you have one thing out of five that's driving a result, put all your eggs in that basket, knowing that otherwise you're not going to be successful. And I think that's a really huge point that every marketer in history is guilty of at some point, is sticking with an idea for too long and not being willing to pivot. So
yeah, for sure. For sure. I think it's, I have this thing that's like, you have to put data over ego. And I think, especially when something was your idea or it was your baby, your concept that you spearheaded, it can be very difficult to admit that it's not working anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. I've been there too many times. I've gotten to the point now where I know if I think something's going to work, it's probably not. So especially on the creative front, let's just run and test these other avenues. And sure enough, usually the creative you think is going to do best is, you know, not the one that does best and vice versa. So it's always an interesting thing, but I think that leads us to a really interesting point is always remember, it's not about what you think is exciting or flashy or cool. It's about what your audience thinks is exciting or flashy or resonates with them. And, you know, I know this is like a bonus point, but especially in the B2B space, too many times have I seen companies, you know, really get hung up on like, no, this is our brand or this is the message we have to go with, only for that not to do anything. And it's because they get really hung up on this is what we want to be, not necessarily what our prospects need or what our prospects want to be. And I think that's really important to recognize because it's not about what you want your prospects to search for. It's not about what you want your prospects to see. It's about what they need. It's about what they're searching for. And you have to be the one that's flexible because they're not going to be.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think it's such a challenge for some marketers. And I've been in positions before as like on the agency side where we're just, you know, we're either struggling to get legal to sign off a creative or we're struggling to get the brand team to sign off a creative, or maybe it's even the CEO. So this is maybe not the best advice to give, but I'm going to give it anyway, because it's worked for me historically. I've done it a number of times, which is sometimes it's much easier to ask for forgiveness than it is to ask for permission. And so if there's ad formats that you know in your gut that they're going to work, I would say just launch them, get the results, and then present the results back. So I think back to one of the last clients I worked with. I was working with the ABM manager. She was struggling to get the brand team to sign something off. And I just said, you know what? Let's create the ads, launch them. If you get in trouble, just blame the agency. Like, I'll take the hit because I know they're going to work. And so they did. These were the first ads that actually generated decent inbound demos for them. Then the brand team asked to switch them off. So we switched them off. And then 2 weeks later, the senior head of marketing was like, we need to get those ads back on immediately because we've suddenly lost the inbound volume that we were getting. So it can work.
Yep. Perfect example, honestly. I think you hit it on the nose.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we're coming up on 20 minutes here. So I want to try and keep it reasonably concise. So I think the last one for me is something that we're doing aggressively on our own marketing. And I know it's something, Rob, that you're kind of a fan of, and even I've been, you know, talking to some of the strategists that you manage. It's on their agenda as well, which is, and honestly, it ties into what we said before, which is just trying to do too much. And that's really what it is. It's just running too many campaigns or having overly complicated account structures.
Yeah, completely agree. Especially true on the B2B side. Not only, like, I would venture to also say having too many keywords within those campaigns, and you kind of hit it, less but better, right? If you're trying to do too much, you're basically not going to achieve anything. And so we've seen, I mean, I could count, you know, I can't count on both hands how many times I've seen over the past, you know, 90 days even, how shifting to this kind of structure improves performance. It really is important right now with how everything's going. The platforms themselves are recommending it, simplification and consolidation. And we are really seeing this drive a lot of success. And exactly goes back to what we were talking about. You shouldn't try to be everything to everybody. You should try to focus on what is actually working, what is driving, you know, success. And if you do get to the point where, you know, you're far enough along the line where you have, you know, introduced new products, you've tested new offers, you're getting to it, then maybe you start expanding out into some of these other campaign types because you have a very successful baseline or foundation. But in most cases, you need to establish that first. And that takes quite some time, quite a lot of spend, quite a lot of audience identification and things like that. So completely agree, cutting down on the volume of campaigns, cutting down on the volume of active keywords to really just focus on what is actually driving results for you and your business is really important. Not only when you have limited budgets, but just in general within your budgets as well. If you want to be efficient, if you want to drive high revenue, high pipeline at a good cost per acquisition, high SQL volume, whatever it is that your main focus is, putting all of your spend into what is actually working will always drive more success than going outside of that. And I'm going to add the caveat that I don't think this means you shouldn't test new things. I do think you should test new things, but there is a time and a place for that as well. And if you have something that's working very well that you haven't capitalized, you know, if you have a very successful search campaign and search impression share isn't maximized, things like that, like you need to maximize the success that you're driving on what's already working before you really just start trying to waste spend and test spend on new initiatives. And most times I see we try to move into that phase a little too early when there's a lot of low-hanging fruit opportunities to be captured just by maximizing the simplistic structure.
Yeah. Do you know what? Let me ask you a question, Rob. I'm curious, right? How many times have you been working with a client and you've got an absolute cash cow of a campaign or channel, and then suddenly they ask to switch it off or change it?
All the time. All the time.
Yeah. It's super, super regular. I think one thing I would add here on the running too many campaigns things, and this is coming into the LinkedIn ads side of things, is I think what companies don't realize when they have 17 campaigns live on LinkedIn is that they're actually also making it harder to reach more people, because one, each campaign is going to optimize independently. So what that means is it's very plausible that all of those campaigns only reach the same people. So you're missing a huge, you know, chunk of the audience. The other problem is by launching more campaigns and targeting that same audience over and over and over and over and over again, you're also artificially inflating CPMs, right? So I think back to a test I ran last year where we took an account from, I think they had about 8 different campaigns. They essentially wanted a different campaign for each different ad asset that they had. And we consolidated it down to one, and CPMs dropped by like 70%. It was crazy.
Yeah, completely agree. I've had that in the past as well, where we, you know, really want to test individual creatives or assets. Document ads is another big one where it's like, we just want one campaign for one ad. And every single time we've tested it, it sometimes performs okay, usually performs pretty poor. Recommend consolidation, getting the, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 6 ads active per campaign, targeting the same audience, and it almost always drives performance up, which is strong. And LinkedIn is especially dangerous because of the nature of the way the platform is and how targeting is set up. You almost, you know, if you want to run a different ad type, it has to be a different campaign and things like that. So I think the theme of today's episode in my mind is don't try to be everything to everybody, like focus on what works and maximize that. And once you've maximized that, then you can have the conversation about more budget. Then you can have the conversation about testing new things and things like that. But LinkedIn, especially, I'm with you. I see a lot of times where it's just far too fragmented to ever see success. And simplifying and consolidating really does drive performance.
For sure, man. And I think it's kind of funny. We have the most sophisticated marketing technology we've ever had in history. Yeah, we always come back to just the, you know, marketing 101 fundamentals, which is not everybody is your target audience. Like, you need to focus.
Yep, 100%. It's definitely interesting that you look back, going back, you know, 50 years, the foundational items that you followed then are the same things you follow now. And I think there's a reason for that. It works.
Yeah, it's cliche to say it, but human nature hasn't changed in like 10,000 years, right? That's what they say. I love it. Cool. So a few tactical takeaways from this episode. So first one, if you can't spend enough to saturate your audience with high frequency, as Rob said, you may as well just throw your money straight into the garbage, because those campaigns are not going to work for you. The second one is, first port of call when stuff isn't working is always to focus on targeting first. So if your targeting is wrong, improving offers or creative is not going to help fix that. You can, you know, can't polish a turd, as they say. And then finally, if in doubt, always simplify. So you'll reach more prospects, collect more data, and just generally improve performance. Rob, any final thoughts from you before we close this one out?
No, I think we pretty much hit it on the head on the B2B side. Simplify. Don't try to be everything to everybody.
Love it, man. I appreciate you joining today. And I will definitely have you on here again, because I think you got loads of wisdom that people are going to get a lot of benefit from.
No, I really appreciate it. Happy to help however I can. And it was great to be on here. I'm very honored to be the first guest.
Cheers, dude.